What is?
What is biblical counseling?
Biblical counseling will grow you from brokenness to wholeness.
I think what you just said made me look at those scenarios differently.
God replaced all my junk with a beautiful light.
God's really been changing the way that I parent my children.
The most amazing thing is the sufficiency of His Word.
This is Transform. And now your host, Assistant Professor of Biblical Counseling at the Master's University and Certified Biblical Counselor, Dr. Greg Gifford.
Welcome back to Transformed. My name is Dr. Greg Gifford, and we are going to go through mental illnesses, addressing what they are, and then thinking biblically about them. So welcome. Today's episode, we'll be focusing on ADHD. Perhaps you've heard of it, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. There's another term, ADD, that can be used, attention deficit disorder. And really, that's the older term. The newer version is ADHD. So when you say ADD or ADHD, you're talking about the same thing. It's said to be a so-called mental illness. It is a mental disorder per the DSM-5. And it is also said to be a neurodevelopmental disorder of childhood. Neurodevelopmental disorder sounds very medicalized, but a mental disorder is going to be addressing the mind and immaterial. So I do encourage you to go back and double check a couple of things that I've said on mind versus brain. That was last fall. Today, I'm going to focus in particular, first of all, on what is ADHD? What does it look like? I'm not trying to misrepresent ADHD. Let me just read to you directly from the CDC. And this is under the cdc.gov website. It's signs and symptoms. So a child with ADHD might daydream a lot, forget and lose things a lot, squirm or fidget, talk too much, make careless mistakes, or take unnecessary risks, have a hard time resisting temptation, have trouble taking turns, have difficulty getting along with others. This is not only something that is diagnosed for children, by the way. When I get to the diagnostic criteria here in a second, there's adult forms of ADHD. Most of the time, if you're diagnosed as an adult, it would be said something like it wasn't caught while you were younger. You weren't tested while you were young to figure out if you do have ADHD or not. But we're at a point now, this is from Forbes, this is from the CDC, both are using the same data, that 6 million kids in America have been diagnosed with ADHD. The most common age group to demonstrate signs of ADHD is 12 to 17. And you may have guessed this as well. For those of you like myself that have boys, boys are more likely than girls to be diagnosed with ADHD. So it's everywhere. My students at Masters, many of them have been diagnosed with this. So this is a question I'll get regularly in my introduction to biblical counseling class. Many of them have been prescribed medications for this. And many of them were born after 1999. You know, so we're at a point where this is kind of after my generation. For some of you listening to this, this is after your generation. And you can take this as you please, but ADHD wasn't a thing whenever I was in seventh grade. It wasn't a term that was being used. I didn't have any friends that were being diagnosed with ADHD. Honestly, I didn't know anything about it until I was an adult, married, living on my own. But that's not true anymore. My students show up at Masters 18, 19 years old, and most of them have been exposed to the diagnosis in some way. So whether that's them personally or whether that's a friend that they know, it's someone they know, them having ADD and then having meds to use either daily or as needed to help with the symptoms of ADHD. So how do you get diagnosed with it? Well, there's generally two overarching categories. I just held my hand up and said two. Did you guys see that, by the way? There's two. Do you see it? What? I don't even not see that. Okay, the first one is inattention. Inattention, and the second is impulsivity/hyperactivity. So let me start with just examples of what inattention look like. And six or more of these have to be present for children up to the age of six. At the end of this, you're going to be like, Dr. Gifford, which child does not express this? Okay, all right. Often fails to give close attention to details or makes careless mistakes in schoolwork, at work, or with other activities. Often has trouble holding attention on tasks or play activities. Often does not seem to listen when spoken to directly. Often does not follow through on instructions and fails to finish schoolwork, chores, or duties in the workplace. Often has trouble organizing tasks and activities. Often avoids dislikes or is reluctant to do tasks that require mental effort over a long period of time, such as schoolwork or homework. Oh, man. I do that. All right, I'm going to keep going. Sorry. Often loses things necessary for tasks and activities, school materials, pencils, books, is often easily distracted, is often forgetful in daily activities. So that is inattention. This is everything from you're having trouble to organize tasks and activities to being easily distracted to being easily forgetful of what you're doing throughout the day. Oh man, that seems a little subjective to you, but these are coming directly from the DSM-5. This is how you would be diagnosed. So let me read hyperactivity before I begin to share my thoughts. And I'm bursting at the seams to share my thoughts. So bear with me here. All right. Hyperactivity. Six or more symptoms of hyperactivity for children up to age 16 or five or more for adolescents age 17 years and older. All right. Hyperactivity. Often fidgets with or taps hands or feet. Often leaves seat in situations when remaining seated is expected. Often runs about or climbs in situations where it's not appropriate. Often unable to play or take part in leisure activities quietly. Is often, quote, on the go, acting as if driven by a motor. Often talks excessively. Often blurts out an answer before a question has been completed. Often has trouble waiting their turn. Often interrupts or intrudes on others, butts into conversations or games. So these are the symptoms. Some of you don't have to be told about this. You see it. Your child has been diagnosed with it, or as you're listening to this, this is what you did in junior high, and that's how you got the label ADHD. Now, where does this primarily manifest itself? Well, it's not rocket science. It's at school. Where do these symptoms primarily manifest themselves? Where does a student not put forward the mental effort over a long period of time and attention, schoolwork or homework? So that's ADHD in a nutshell. Those are not biblical counseling definitions. That's the DSM-5 and the CDC for just the figures in regard to how many people have been diagnosed with it. So this is going to be one of my first questions that I will ask you. Which of that is medical? Which of that's medically related? If we're saying this is a mental disease, what part of that is a disease? Just ask yourself that. Is there an x-ray? Is there a CT scan? Did you do lab work on that seventh grade student and draw blood to see a vitamin deficiency? And if you did not, then maybe, just maybe, it's not a medical issue as it's being put forward by the DSM and the CDC. Maybe it's not a medical issue at all. In fact, most of these things are social, personal descriptions. They personally struggle holding attention, or socially they butt into a conversation. Is that a social issue? Is that a personal issue? Or is that a medical issue? Let me ask you this question. And listeners, you're probably going to hear maybe a more sober tone because my oldest son experienced some of this when he was in public school. You'll read more about it in my forthcoming book, but he was asked to be tested for this very thing and learning disability. So this is very personal to me. Let me ask you this. Can your child focus on things they enjoy? When your sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade child sits down to watch a movie, can they sit still for an hour and a half? Can they play video games for an hour and a half, 2 hours? I've yet to meet with a family where the answer is no. They can't sit still even while watching their favorite show or even while playing video games. I have yet to meet that family. Ask yourself about that with your nephew, your son, your daughter, whoever it is that you're thinking about right now with ADHD. If you handed them your phone and said, do whatever you want to do for 2 hours, could they sit still? And if they can, then what does that mean? That means there is a level of self-control. There is a level of focus. There is a level of an ability to do something for a long period of time. So why do we see this primarily at school? Because school is boring to some students. School's not what their giftedness is best utilized in. So why do we see fidgety seventh grade boys? Because they're not good at school, in all fairness. And I'm not sure they have to be. So can your student focus when they watch a movie? And if they can, that's a clue to you that maybe they don't have a problem that is a disorder, but maybe there are pockets of giftedness and skills that they need to work on. And there's also areas they need to grow in, like maturity, self-control, so forth, persevering in a task. So this is ADHD in a nutshell. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to give you the biblical synthesis and my answer to some of the questions, like, is it actually a disorder? So I hope you'll join us for our next segment.
And we'll get back to Dr. Gilbert in just a moment and today's episode on ADHD. But before we do, I want to take a moment to share some resources that I think you'll find super helpful. First of all, if you're looking for a book that will help you live with confidence in God, a lot of Christians struggle with assurance in their salvation. I want to recommend Hope, Living Confidently in God by Dr. John Krotz. It's available right now in the Transform store at transformed.org. And this book is all about understanding hope as confidence in a better future. Because without that hope, it's easy for us to get stuck in our struggles of today. We live with blinders on and we don't see anything else around us but what is happening in our own lives. And this resource by Dr. John Krotz gives you practical tips to keep your heart anchored in the promises of God. And it allows you to see everything else around you, not just your own circumstances. Head over to transform.org and grab your copy of Hope, Living Confidently in God by Dr. John Krotz. Now, let's switch gears just a second and talk about something extremely important to all of us here at Gospel Partners Media, and that's the mission that we're on. Not only with Transform, but through our entire ministry, we want to preach the gospel, teach others to preach the gospel, and equip the local church. That is the overwhelming scope of our ministry, and we need your help and support in order to continue doing this. So would you pray about what it would look like in your life to partner with us financially to help us to continue producing Transformed and all of our other resources like Wretched Radio and TV, Road Trip to Truth, Wretched Worldview, Breaking Bread, and others. If you're already giving to your local church and you're not in debt, we would love for you to think about taking the next step in supporting us here at Gospel Partners Media. Head over to transform.org right now to get all of the details. Finally, if today's episode or any of the Transformed episodes have got you to thinking about how you can better care for others, then I highly recommend you pick up Instruments in the Redeemer's Hands. It's by Paul David Tripp, and it is a literal pull the scales off your eyes resource for anyone who's looking to learn about biblical counseling. Grab a copy of Instruments in the Redeemer's Hands right now by Paul David Tripp, available at transformed.org. All right, well, that's going to do it for me. Let's get back to Dr. Gifford now as he continues to unpack the complex issues of an ADHD diagnosis through the lens of Scripture. This is Transformed. Welcome back to Transformed.
We have a tendency to let our feelings be the engine that drives our lives. And when we do, despair is soon to follow.
And now your host, Dr. Greg Gifford.
Jimmy, thank you, sir. Thanks for all the diligent work that you put into producing this show and squaring me away personally. So thank you for your help. Thanks for joining us back. We have been talking about ADHD. And as you know, it is one of the primary mental disorders that minors, think under 18, children are diagnosed with. It is one of the top three reasons why folks are being prescribed psychotropics. In my class, Introduction to Biblical Counseling at the Master's University, a student will inevitably ask me is ADHD a mental illness? And my answer to that is no, it is not a mental illness. And for some of you, you're like, what? Dr. Gifford lives in a basement. He packs his own ammunition. He's wearing an aluminum foil cap right now. No, I do believe in science, and I don't believe we're going to be invaded by aliens. I don't pack my own ammunition. You know, you need to go back and review what is a mental illness in the first place. But do I believe that you have a disease and a disorder? I do not. I don't use that term, and I don't accept that term. Go through the criteria I've just read and ask which one are medically related. Why use illness and disease over a non-medical issue? So is it a mental illness? No, it is a matter of giftedness versus weakness. I mentioned this a second ago. I have yet to meet that seventh grade. I keep saying seventh grade because this is usually the age when young boys are diagnosed with ADHD. It's around seventh or eighth grade. I have yet to meet that young boy who cannot sit down and play Zelda for hours. Hours! He can sit down and get lost in Mario Kart and Fortnite, and yet when he reads a book, he struggles to read it. So I'm not buying the fact that he can't focus. What we're seeing is that he struggles to focus on things he doesn't enjoy. And welcome to the rest of mankind. Hello, put me back in algebra class in college and watch my brain melt, not my mind. My brain will literally melt if you put me in an algebra class right now. So yes, I totally resonate with not enjoying things and struggling to focus on things that are laborious. Have you ever done taxes? Oh, I budget three different sittings when I'm doing my taxes because I don't enjoy it. I am not excited about doing taxes. So I resonate with that. But that doesn't mean that they have a disorder because they struggle to focus on something. So what is it? We're talking about a giftedness. So think of the way the Bible describes people. Some of us have varying gifts. Some of us have serving gifts, gifts of charity. This is the Romans 12 understanding. 1 Peter 4, verse 10 and 11 also talk about similar gifts. The gifts of teaching, administration, and so forth. There are certain people that are busier than other people. They're more active. They're restless. They're not going to sit down. They're up going. Their brain is churning and they're doing stuff. There are actually vocations that are blessed by that type of hyperactivity, quote unquote. ER doctor, think of a general contractor, think of a high-paced healthcare environment, think of a park ranger, think of the food and the restaurant industries that are very high tempo. Just because you are struggling with hyperactivity doesn't mean that you have a disease or a disorder. It means that you don't do well in an environment where you're supposed to sit in a desk for 7 hours every day. There's the reality that you're not going to be a great librarian. That's totally fair. We're not going to put you in a cubicle and tell you to look at an Excel sheet. But what is that? That's giftedness, folks, and that's a weakness. That means that in other areas, it's a strength and a help. So you really have to push back against disorder and disease mentality. It's not a disorder and it's not a disease. Find a meaningful place of expressing that and then do so. So if you're sensing that I don't do great in school, hey, welcome to the majority of mankind that did not sit in school for 7 hours a day. Seriously, study the way that education has developed and become very formal within the past 150 years. So I'm not anti-education. I'm just saying that most of mankind has not sat in a desk for 7 hours a day. So when we see folks that are struggling to do that, then recognize that their giftedness just doesn't seem to match being the quiet, still studier. I've also met students that they just get lost in reading. It's like an alternate reality they construct. I mean, it's hours of reading and books. And I myself was never that way as a child. I never got lost reading James and the Giant Peach. I think that's the only book I read fourth grade and early. And the Bible, of course. I mean, obviously, we're assuming that, the whole thing. So think of giftedness versus weakness. What is this person's giftedness? What are their weaknesses? Next, it should not shock you that most of the diagnosing happens around puberty. Most of the diagnosing for ADHD happens around puberty. What's happening at puberty? girls are maturing faster than guys. A lot of fifth grade, sixth grade girls have already hit puberty. So your seventh and eighth grade boys are still physically immature. And then obviously there's other aspects of immaturity there. So who is it that's getting hit most with this diagnosis? Junior high boys, sixth to eighth grade boys. Well, we have a maturity issue that's taking place. Some of it's physical. Some of it's actually developmental. Some of it entails the way that your physical capacities are increasing, yes, which affect things like judgment and impulsivity and restraint and self-control. So don't be surprised that if you just wait, your student grows out of it as they mature, both physically, spiritually, and so forth. Don't be surprised. Whereas if you're having that school counselor say, I think you need to go on medication, when you're in seventh grade, don't be surprised. That's really the peak issue. That's the time of crisis. What else do we have going on here? Self-denial and self-control. We are helping our students learn that there are some things in life that are just simply not fun, and it's good for them to do that. When I drop my oldest son off at the math tutor, that is a conversation we have quite regularly. I don't personally enjoy math. Some of you love it. I don't personally enjoy it. I find it to be very laborious and soul-sucking for me. I want to be with people. Put me with people. So when we're doing something that's not exciting, we have to deny ourselves and we actually have to discipline ourselves. Students are learning this, that they do not live in a world that is all about fun things and only the things that they do are to be enjoyable to them. They're going to face things that are difficult and they must persevere through that. If they do not learn that early in life, they will be crippled by this. So self-denial, self-control, this is an important one to consider. Now, inevitably, you're asking, what about medication? Should I allow my child to take medication? Should I listen to the school psychologist, school counselor? Should I listen to the medical doctor and put them on meds? The short answer is that you can do that when it's done legally with God-honoring motivations. You can use psychotropics. Do you need them? Do you need them is really the question. Well, if your son is in puberty or your daughter is in junior high, the better part of wisdom is to say, well, let's just see what happens as they grow up a little bit. Let's see how this goes. Can they focus when it's interesting to them? And if they can, I know they have the capacity. They just have to learn how to direct it towards their studies. Are they super active, hyperactive, jumping off the chair and so forth? Well, yes, but there are other places where they're not doing that and they're very focused and very compliant. So if you have a younger child, they're younger in their grade from their peers, if they haven't hit puberty and your school psychologist comes to you in seventh grade and says, I think they need meds, my recommendation is to just wait and see if they will mature. Revisit that in ninth grade and 10th grade. If you see them, or excuse me, if you use psychotropic meds for ADHD, just try to avoid the needing mentality versus the helping mentality. The best way I could describe that is that many of us, first thing we do in the morning, we go make a cup of coffee and we say, yeah, it just kind of helps me wake up, helps me focus, helps me be alert. Yes. Think of the psychotropic meds that you're using for ADHD like that. You don't need them, but sometimes they can be helpful to you. Avoid a need mentality if you do feel compelled to put your son on meds. Avoid that. You don't want them to think that I can only function if I have my meds, because that's simply not true. If I were to say, hey, Johnny, here's $1 million. That means you can get a lot of PS5s. Here's $1 million. If you sit in your seat for 2 hours, I would be willing to bet that Johnny would feel strongly compelled and most Johnnies would be successful at sitting in that chair because they wanted that $1 million. So when you think of this, think meds are not an inherent sin. They can be used legally and in God-honoring ways. You're always working with your medical doctor, but you're avoiding a need mentality. And the better part of wisdom says, if they're in puberty, then let's just wait and see how they mature and then revisit this a little bit later. So I'm sure this will stir up a lot of questions for you, and I welcome them. Please write to me, greg@transform.org, and know we're going to do this with depression. We're going to do this with anxiety. We're going to keep breaking down so-called mental illnesses and offering a biblical perspective of them. So let me pray for us, and we'll be done for today. Lord, it is burdensome at times to see that there are those that have been identified as ADHD or ADHD brains, as I've heard it said. Lord, help us to recognize that you have made us also uniquely with strengths and weaknesses. May we help protect future generations from receiving unwelcome and unfounded so-called mental disorders and diseases. Lord, may we still be attentive and helpful, but may we actually look to you, look to discipline, look to maturity, look to really the root issues instead of just looking immediately to our medications to fix problems. Lord, give us the grace for this. This is heavy lifting, I know, and I pray that you would bless our efforts in Jesus' name. Amen.
This has been Transform with Dr. Greg Gifford, a production of Gospel Partners Media. Our website, of course, is transformed.org, and it is your central hub for finding in-depth information on all things Transformed. If you've enjoyed Transform with Dr. Greg Gifford, consider subscribing and sharing with your friends and church family. Also, would you prayerfully consider joining this labor of love by becoming an ongoing monthly Gospel Partner? And until next time, go serve your King.